Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Discussions for Women in Leadership from Studio G, joined by Lori Beth Jones. And the Studio G representatives with us today are Elisa Holston, representing the education pillar, and Vicky Arteaga, representing the business pillar. We're glad that you're with us. And today's topic will continue to focus us on what it means to be an Omega leader as a woman in leadership. And coining Lori Beth's phrase of Omega leader, she's with us today to continue those thoughts and discussions around the leader as courage. And so welcome, Lori Beth. We're glad you're here. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you.
And Elisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just so excited to talk about this topic, women in leadership and courage in leadership. And I wanted to open the show today with some passages from the book of Judges, Judges 5. And it's talking about Deborah, who was a judge in Israel. She's one of the few women mentioned by name in the scriptures. And this is the setting. In the days of Shamgar, son of Anath, days of Jael, there were no more caravans. Those who went forth on their travels took their way along the bypaths. This means that Deborah noticed that business had slowed down because people were afraid, and so they were scurrying along the bypaths rather than traveling in caravans. The resulting impact of that was that there were no more villages. The villages in Israel were no more. Until you arose, O Deborah, until you arose, mother of Israel. And then it says, the people were choosing new gods when war was at the gates. Now, this is just a profound sentence, because when war comes in terms of conflict, that's when you really see what gods your leaders worship. Is it the god of ambition? Is it the god of money? Is it the god of status? Or is it the god of gods, the Lord of Lords? So it says here that there was no sword that arose among the 40,000 men of Israel. And Deborah is lamenting this. She's going on, and she talks about, in the clans of Reuben, there was much searching of heart. Why did you stay among the sheep, listening for the whistle with the flocks? And then she says it again, in the clans of Reuben, there was much searching of heart. Gilead stayed on the other side of the Jordan, and why should Dan have stayed aboard his ships? Asher remained beside the sea, peacefully living among his ports. Zebulun is a people who have braved death, Naphtali too, on the high ground of the country. And I thought a lot about the clan of Reuben, much searching of hearts, much prayer. Lord, should we go into battle? Let's pray about it some more. I don't know. Let's search our hearts some more. And I was reading The Bridge of Sighs by Richard Russo, and he had a phrase in there that just really struck me, and it was inertia rationalized. So I think that the definition of courage is taking action toward what is important, no matter what the cost. It is not staying aboard the ship or rationalizing inertia.
Wow, that's very powerful. And, just by the definition you gave about courage, what do you think is the source of that courage?
Well, I think it is the knowledge that we are from God, we're going to God, and that we're put here by God. And so I think about young David saying, "Well, I've killed lions and I've killed bears in the defense of sheep. God can certainly kill a giant." So some of that courage comes from experience of having successful experience of leadership, and then just extrapolating that exponentially to say, "Well, if I killed a bear, I could kill a giant." That's a form of courage, too, is just taking the next step.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody has not experienced, I'm sure everybody has experienced previous successes, but you might not be conscious about that. Maybe because of the messages that your parents or people around you told you about it, it's like, well, you're not that good, or that's good enough for you, things like that. That maybe might limit your ability to recognize that you have had previous experiences where you come through. So how can you enlighten somebody that might have those fears because of the lies that he or she believes in this case?
Well, in my book, The Power of Positive Prophecy, I talk about how important it is to download all the prophecies that you've received through your parents, family, friends, teachers, judges, police officers. You know, what are people telling you that you are? And then I ask in seminars, I said, how many of you have never received a positive prophecy? And a lot of people say, I never have. And I said, well, you haven't read scripture then, because if you are infused with God and with Jesus, you can do all things through Christ, and you are a new creation, and nothing is impossible for you. So we really need to meditate on the new creation that we've been given and not focus so much on what other people told us, because they're talking from their own limitations.
It reminds me of a chapter in GCCO where you talk about the importance of a leader believing in herself. And as I was reading that, I was thinking about some leaders that I've experienced that perhaps believed in themselves too much. And what happens when a leader believes in himself or herself so much to the extreme that it results in limited self-knowledge, and that person is perhaps blind to his or her own weaknesses, and thus his or her own fears, limiting this wisdom of his or her decisions as well as the effectiveness in leading a group of people, because
right,
it's all about her or all about him.
Well, and we see, and we have certainly seen in the past, leaders acting out their own issues on a world stage. So that's why self-mastery is the first discipline of an Omega leader. Jesus knew his potential weaknesses, because when you look at what he was tested with in the wilderness, they were all powers that he had been given. Was he going to use them for himself or for the good of the kingdom? So if you walk onto the battlefield knowing that you have your weakness in your right flank, then you're going to guard that right flank and make sure that you don't lean into it and thus fall. So that's why it's very important to say, you know what, I have a tendency to be a show-off, say, for a fire, speaking of the fire. I tend to overcommit the troops. I've dealt with this. I realize this is weak. So before I do that, Lord, help me watch my mouth. Help me get wise counsel. Mm-hmm. Help me seek wisdom from the other elemental personality types before I put us on a course that's going to put us in harm's way.
And speaking of that, and speaking of the fire, I was also reading in GCCO, and you're talking about don't kick the donkey, and you're talking about how when you're on a path, sometimes there are signals and signs that warn us of impending danger, and as a fire, my tendency is just to push through in spite of the danger and conquer the fear, push through and conquer the fear. And I kind of put it in the context of fear, just reflecting about fear this week. And how do you know, I guess, if you're talking about Deborah and you're talking about, you know, the inertia and courage, how do you know if your inertia is going to take you off the edge of the cliff, as in the case of the donkey preventing ball from falling off the face of the cliff?
Right, right. Well, that prophet, it had to do with the mission, because that prophet was out of work, and so someone actually hired him to go curse somebody. So he was a mercenary. He was working purely for profit. He had not received a prophecy from the Lord. It was just someone basically sending him to badmouth the competition. So he was on his way to do that. So his donkey stopped, and he kept beating the donkey and trying to kick it, make it move. And then finally, the Lord opened his eyes, and he saw the angel of death standing there saying, if the donkey hadn't stopped, I was sent to kill you. So that was a very, very clean message, clear message. I say in the book that he must have kissed that donkey all the way back to the barn. So I think it goes back to motivation. What is the motivation that you have for taking this action? Is it from a pure heart? Is it in line with God's mission for you? Or is it something that you're doing based on mercenary or lesser motivations?
Yeah. And just to kind of switch the flow here just for a second, when we're talking about building a leadership style or a management style, using your coined phrase, Lori Beth, the Omega leader, when you actually put these thoughts down about fear and hard decisions these are things that are hard to do as a leader. And when you wrote these words, kind of tell us a little bit about, you know, what you saw an Omega leader able to do as a result of knowing not just their personality, not just their elemental makeup. What is it that you saw that person, that leader, she being able to do differently in the face of fear when you wrote these words?
Well, the notion that we're going to do something when the fear is gone is a myth, because the closer we get to the prize, the more afraid we become. Mm. And I use the story of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. When he was out in the marketplace, you know, showing off with his whip and everything, nothing was really happening to him. The closer he got to reaching the prize, all hell broke loose in terms of boulders rolling, spiders dropping, snakes coiling. And so I talk about that in the creative tensions of the path, that the closer you get to a breakthrough, the more resistance and fear is going to raise its head. And we do an exercise in our workshop sometimes about, I give a woman a ring and I say, your job is to put it in the cup at the top of the head of the room. And I assign people to be her fears. And I say, you can do anything, but you cannot touch her. And so I say, go. And it is amazing that the closer she gets to dropping the ring in the cup, the more frantic and vocal the fears become. They are waving in her face, they are shouting, and she is having to do all sorts of things to get past them.
Right.
So they realize the time is short and they're about to lose. So if you see the fears as that, thinking that you're going to do this when you're not afraid, or that courage is going to raise its head and carry you across the river in its arms, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to feel the fear and do it anyway, as Jeff so beautifully said.
Mm.
So as we continue today around this topic of courage and discussion, there are several thoughts in our heads that we'd like to kind of place on the table and get you to address from the position of being a woman in leadership in particular, since that's what our format is about from Studio G. And so we're going to go back over to Vicki, and she's got a few more questions on this topic for us.
Thank you. So the courage, it's something that a leader must be aware of, and also the limitations that leader might have. And I think it goes hand in hand with communication with others, as well as communication with the source of the power, in this case, like God. How good it is to be vulnerable enough to say to your team, you know what, we're in this race to succeed, but these are my fears.
Well, I think that, and we talked about this before the show, and it's just a brilliant question, because women particularly, we're used to a collaborative form of leadership and sharing our emotions, and the group gives us strength. And yet when you get into a position of leadership, the tendency is to have bravado and take a cocky stance and act like you're not afraid of anything. So the Omega leader, based on Jesus' style, confides in close friends and associates what they're feeling when he said, will you wait with me? And he confessed his fears, and he wept. And so vulnerability is very much a part of the Omega leadership style. Now, you have to be selective in who you share that with. It's a select few, not the masses, I would say. And another thing that I've noticed looking at Scripture, the leaders who felt the fear and did it anyway, in the book of Esther, if you read in the New Jerusalem Bible, she wrote this incredible letter to God about her feelings of inadequacy and of the whole race and how they had let him down and all of these things, and yet she prayed for courage. And so it's really good to journal and just mind dump everything. You know, Lord, I stutter, I can't, my lips are unclean, all these things that people had to deal with, a sense of inadequacy, get it down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, I think, to have a coach who you can talk to and confide in, and that's a role that I've taken with CEOs. Nobody they can't really share their fears, and nobody really tells them, well done, either. There's always a lot of pressure to perform, and what have you done lately? And so the role of a coach cannot be overestimated in a good Omega leadership program. So
that's a great point, Roy Beth, in looking at this style, management style of an Omega leader, is if there isn't someone on your team that you feel that you can be vulnerable with, that you feel safe enough to share your fears or decisions that have to be made, those hard decisions, getting a coach is what you would recommend, and I think that's a great point.
Right.
Wow.
And I know when I had to face my own fears in writing Jesus CEO, I went to a counselor. I went to a professional who deals with issues of the mind and heart, and she was really good, and she said, well, what are you afraid of when you write this book? And I said, I'm afraid that I'll get labeled a Jesus freak. I'm afraid I'll have to shut down my company. And I'm afraid that my life is going to change. And she said, and that will happen. And it was like, oh, great, well, thank you. You know, do I pay you now or later? And then she said, what are you hoping to have happen? And I said, I want to connect leaders around the world who have the same vision that I have. And I want to send a message that Jesus's words are relevant for today, and I want to change the culture of fear and intimidation that is being promoted in business, she said, and that will happen. And when I weighed the cost, I chose the route that I wanted, and everything did come true. I did get labeled a Jesus freak. I did lose my company. I mean, it morphed into something else. But the joy was so profound that it didn't seem like a cost at all.
Talk to me a little bit about, following up on Vicki's question about, as a woman perhaps being more vulnerable to perceptions based on how she expresses emotion because it's expected, and you paint that as a strength, make a leader, that collaborative style.
Right.
What are some, you talk about, you just shared with us about the importance of having someone with whom you can divulge your fears, a coach, a mentor, a counselor. How much should the Omega leader communicate concerns and fears to the team in general she is leading? What are the boundaries there?
Well, I think that I think it's situational, and again, it depends on the culture of the company that has been established. Certainly, people rally around leaders who are resolved. So you could share your concerns. These are the costs, and Jesus very much told them the costs. And I think a lot of fear is around cost. What's this going to cost me emotionally, financially, time-wise, status-wise? And so by addressing the cost, then you narrow down the group who are willing to go with you and facing the cost, because I think a leader who does not face the dangers realistically is not really a leader. They're a fool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fine line there.
Yeah. And so another position where a leader might be is like with the difficult decisions, just doing the right thing, right? And doing the right thing might involve staying alone. How do you process staying alone? And I noticed we took a trip, a road trip to Northern California, and the eagles were flying, and they fly alone.
Right.
And you could see other species, and they were flying in flocks and making a very nice shapes and all that, but the eagle was way, way up and alone. And it's a tough position for a leader to be. How do you take advantage of that? Because it has to have more advantages than disadvantages. So high, flying so high alone.
Yes. Well, I say in Jesus CEO that one of the marks of the leader is their willingness to stand alone. Because we tend to think of leaders by counting their followers, but that's not necessarily the case, because sheep will follow anyone, and Hitler certainly had millions following him, and he was an evil leader. A true leader is willing to look at their weaknesses, confront the fears, and move forward with or without someone else. I am going to do this with or without someone else. And when people line up behind you, that's great. And then when God tells you to go another direction and they start falling away, like Jesus said, it's going to be the cost. Will you still walk with me? And he saw the crowds begin to disappear. Then that's that mark of a leader, is because ultimately It's you and God. Mm-hmm. And the eagle flying alone stands.
Yeah.
Do you feel that fears faced by men and women are different as leaders?
Boy, that's a great question.
Great question.
Yeah. I think it depends on the personality. And I think that there has been a culture of women being told not to lead, certainly in churches historically. And we're seeing more and more women leaders in business, in law, in education, in healthcare. In fact, it's really going to be the age of women leadership in many, many ways. So I think leaders, as women, they might be afraid of losing friendship. I noticed when we did the exercises and seminars, fears was quite often, I'm going to lose my friends. And in one of them, her fears was her friend. And so she was saying, don't go, don't go. And she literally grabbed her ankle, and the woman was moving forward, dragging this woman, this mm-hmm. friend alone, along, trying to hold her back or keep her in her own comfort zone. So I think it depends on the individual, and then certainly to address cultural imprinting is important.
As a leader, I must confess, sometimes one of my fears is success. Why does that happen in leaders?
Well, the fear of success means change. And so leaders sometimes really like the way things are, and they don't want it to change too much, because when you head into rockier water, you can get kicked out of the boat or flipped out of the boat. And I was walking along the shores in Del Mar, and this is actually one of the pictures in my postcards on leadership, and there was a kayak that was stranded on seaweed on the beach, and children were gathered around it, and I asked the parent if I could take the picture, and he said yes. And I was just amazed at watching. There was a little girl with an oar, and she was trying to get the boat lifted out of the seaweed, and there were two boys that were pouring water into a purple plastic tube that actually went under the boat and came out the other side. And what was interesting was the oldest boy was actually carrying sand and putting it into the boat. And buckets of sand. And then a younger boy was trying to get the sand out of the boat. And I thought, this is just such a picture of teams at work in America and around the world. And then the older boy, actually, after he put a bunch of sand in the boat, he sat on the bow of the boat and took a supervisory position. And I thought, this boy has no desire to take that boat to sea. He likes the activity that's going on right now.
Yeah.
So it's. I think that can be true of leaders too.
How does one as a leader, let's change that dynamic a little bit. Imagine you were the leader of this young man, perhaps his parent or whatever. How do you, in leading team members, who oftentimes that's the team members' mentality, they don't really want to be successful. They're comfortable with the status quo. But I'm fine moving buckets of sand. I don't want to go out to sea. How does a leader help encourage one's team members, perhaps face their fears and overcome them as well?
Well, I think that means knowing your team and knowing the individual mission of the team. And even as I think this, it could be that the mission of that young man was to babysit those kids. And so, you know, sometimes we can judge wrongly the actions of a leader, because he was pretty wise if that was the case. They were too young to go out to sea. On the other hand, if his father wanted him to take that kayak out to sea, and he was being like the clan of Reuben, much searching of heart or staying inertia rationalized, then he would have missed the boat literally and figuratively.
That is a great picture. As I just kind of sit here thinking about all the different aspects of leadership and courage and fear and, wow, all combined in that boat probably.
Right.
All at the same time, yet stationary, not moving. And I think that that's what we're talking about today as we look at courage. It's, fear is debilitating, I think, as you said, you know, in the beginning here with us talking about what it means to be a courageous leader. So if we, you know, we've got 4 or 5 more minutes this morning to really hone and pin down what it is that we can take away from this session today. you know, as the listeners that are going to hear this show later in the week or, you know, sometime in the next year, however that might look, there, you know, there's a real urgency, I believe, in our times to be effective leaders, be courageous. And the conflicts and the decisions and the rapid fire motions and movements of our day-to-day, you know, sometimes just it seems impossible, you know, as an Omega leader, like Vicki said, to often do the right thing, to often move the right direction. So in our 3 or 4 minutes we have left, can you just share with this audience what it is that you would infuse in them this week as they leave the show or as they hear this message? What motivation, what encouragement, what insights can you close with as we leave this?
Well, I think so much of leadership is really the ability to tune to the right station. And there's a voice, I mean, there's a scripture that says, hear a voice behind you saying, this is the path, walk ye in it. There is always direction from a higher power. If we can tune out the fears, if we can tune out the noise and the distraction and the shouts of the crowd and the drum beats and the horses' hooves pounding on the field, if you can listen to the still small voice and turn up the volume on that, then you will be well served. I've talked to people who have gone into battle, and they say some of them say there is a shell that drops over them, and they've never felt closer to God than in those moments of near death. And I've certainly had a couple of near death experiences, and it was just this beautiful, almost blissful feeling, and the people that around me that were shouting and in conflict, I couldn't hear them. It was just
a bubble
of knowing that I was doing the right thing.
Yeah. And isn't that amazing when you're in the bubble? And I felt that. I had a couple of instances where I had an accident, a car accident, years ago in Mexico. And I thought we were going to die. So we were hit front head with another car, and our car just went around, and I thought we're all going to die. And suddenly I feel this, like, bubble, and it was a peace. It was a peace that surpassed any understanding, I think.
Right. And I think, too, that if, as an Omega leader, if we are clear about our mission and we have communicated clearly with our friends our own abilities, counted the cost, and then resolved to do the right thing no matter what, we will not flinch at the critical moment. And that's what makes an Omega leader.
So thank you, Lori Beth, for your time today and for joining Studio G. And thank you, Vicki and Elisa, as well, for being a part of this show. And if you would like to interact with Lori Beth in the future, you can go to the pathleader.wordpress.com and find her blog there and leave her a message, or you can also message us at speaking@loribethjones.com. If you have ideas for future shows, or if you have a question for Lori Beth, maybe you are an emerging Omega leader and you want to connect and continue your place in leadership, we invite you to do that. So thanks so much for joining again today. Next week we will continue our discussions on women in leadership and look for Lori's thoughts on destiny and Lori's thoughts on what it means to be an Omega leader outside of the workplace and in the family. So continue on this week. We bless each of you and thank you for listening in, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.